left or right, it could be red or blue. You better listen up, friends, cause we got a show for you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cody Talks Web Only Wednesdays. It is Wednesday, May 8th. Getting started a little bit later than normal today, but that's the cool thing about the internet is we can kind of do this whenever we want to, and then we'll just let everybody know that we're coming on. We have a really cool guest today that is exciting to me for a whole bunch of different reasons, and very, very interesting life and some particularly cool things happening right now. We have J.W. Winslow with us. J.W., there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, good morning.
Good morning to you. That's not the coolest thing going on in your life, but about the third or fourth coolest thing going on in your life right now is the fact that you lived in my hometown of Hutchinson, Kansas for a little while.
Yeah, you didn't think that I'd even know where you were, right?
No, I thought I would have. I have this standard, and in fact, I think this is, we're approaching like my 106th or 107th phone interview.
Right.
And so I've developed this standard. We're 45 minutes north of Wichita, just south of the center of Kansas. It's kind of my standard sentence. And I was right on the verge of throwing my standard Hutchinson geography lesson at you when you came back with you lived here once before.
Right. That's, well, and you know, I think you may have read about my dad. My dad actually, when I was living in Hutchinson, was on a nightclub tour and he was playing in Wichita. So he came up and got me and took me back down there and I spent the night with him, while he was on the road doing this show. So, I remember that, you know, really well.
Yeah, that's crazy. We used to have actually a Naval Air Station in Hutchinson,
yes,
Kansas.
We did.
Which, I don't know the particulars on the dates, but it's been closed. I think it's actually been closed, just about my entire lifetime. But it's kind of crazy too to have but you tell people we have a naval base in Kansas, but it was a naval.
Right.
It was
I have told people that too, because my stepfather was in the Navy. He was an officer in the Navy and he was in the Supply Corps. So they put him in charge of, you know, ordering huge amounts of things for all of these stations, you know, in certain parts of the country. And people would say, what were you doing in Kansas? Well, you know, I guess they have, you know, they do have military in Kansas.
Yeah, and absolutely. And since it was an air station, it makes a little bit, we can't get much more landlocked than Kansas. We're about as far away from a naval ship as you can possibly get.
That's very true.
But we did have a naval air station here, and that's a really cool thing. It's kind of a little bit of a pride for me. I love my hometown, and it's neat when people that I don't expect to even have ever heard of it.
What goes on in Hutchinson now?
We're just kind of your typical, a little bit bigger than a small town. You know, it's 40,000. Hutchinson's 40,000 people.
About the same size. I live in Monterey, California, which is, you know, not a big town, but not a tiny town either. You know, everybody kind of knows everybody if you live here long enough.
Yeah, you may not know everybody, but you definitely know somebody that everybody knows.
Right.
You can't run into somebody and not make some sort of a connection.
Did you grow up there?
I did. I spent 4 years in San Diego in the Marine Corps. But other than that, I've been in, I live 20 miles outside of Hutchinson.
Okay. Well, you know where Laguna Beach is.
Oh, absolutely. I've dove Laguna Beach a couple dozen times.
Right. Well, I grew up mostly in Laguna Beach.
Yeah. And it's different. You know, I've been to Monterey, Monterey may be, maybe 40,000 people. It's vastly different than Hutchinson, you know, different day to day and different culture.
Absolutely.
But Hutchinson's really done a great job in the last 10 or 15 years of kind of breaking a little bit of a quasi-boring mold. We've really worked hard in upping our diversity in culture and the arts some really cool things.
What is the main business in Hutchinson?
Oh, the big business used to be aviation. It was aviation parts. We were kind of a support hub for Wichita and for Boeing and Cessna over there. We had a big Cessna plant. That's all kind of faded away. What we're famous for is salt. We have the largest underground salt deposit in the world underneath Hutchinson, Kansas.
But don't you also have wheat?
Absolutely. Once you get outside of the city limits, I would say that wheat is probably our.
We lived in the naval housing, and I don't even know where it was. I was way too young, but I remember we lived right next to a wheat field.
Yeah, you actually in the housing was actually on the base then, just outside of town. Yeah.
We lived on this very strange base and. I just remember that we had all these mice in the house because of lived in the wheat field.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
People think that I'm making that up, and you know, you don't really remember that. I go, yes, I do.
No, if you live next to a wheat field, then you either have a lot of cats or a lot of mice. There's no doubt about it. They just.
I remember my mom screaming, you know, and standing on chairs.
Yeah, well, that's one reaction to it. You got to find the right amount of cats, and you can balance that thing out a little bit. But that's definitely a byproduct of a wheat field. And we have wheat like you guys in California have salt water. We have a lot of wheat. Anyway, a little bit of a side note there. Very cool that that's how the conversation started. I want to talk just a little bit. I know you have a lot of things going on in your life. I want to talk a little bit about growing up with your dad and who he was. Your dad was, I've been all through it, and your dad was a legendary supporting role actor. Is that a fair statement that he wasn't?
I would say that he was what we call a working actor. You know, in Hollywood, right. There is a group of people, which also include the big stars, but also there is a large group of supporting actors who work all the time. And my dad, my dad was in the movies from the time he was 2 and 3 years old.
Yeah, I read, I mean, it's like a 60-plus year career. Is that,
right.
That's not
yeah.
an understatement.
I mean,
he
was in very, very famous old movies like Mutiny on the Bounty and all these things when he was young. And then he graduated to, he worked in films all of his life and probably met, every major actor and filmmaker in the business.
Yeah, I think when you can put Clark Gable and John Wayne on a list, that you're not the. I think there's probably people that claim that they're working supporting actors that haven't been able to check that off their list. Those are pretty big items, in my opinion. And he was in The Shootist, which I told you before we came on. I loved when John Wayne kind of got serious and some of his early westerns, I still loved him. A little bit on the maybe goofy, overbearing.
A little bit cheesy.
Right. And The Shootist was not. The Shootist was an excellent movie. Had a story and a message and a back plot to it.
Right.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Then obviously.
What about True Grit?
Oh, loved it. I loved True Grit and he still had, it still had a little bit of John Wayne playing a cheesy, over the top tough guy.
Right.
But still a great story there as opposed to the just ride into town, shoot the bad guys. Get the girl. There was a backstory to it, and
have you seen the new True Grit?
I have, and I'm a big, big fan of it. Actually, I like
really?
It. Yeah,
I didn't like it as well.
Well, I know I wouldn't. I'm not saying I like it as well. But I do think that they made a good attempt to make a good movie there. It wasn't just a cheesy knockoff of an original, in my opinion.
Right.
Nothing compares to the original.
John Wayne, actually, when I was growing up in Laguna, I worked out At a place called Coto de Casa, which is a kind of a ranch that's out, you know, it's in the country near Laguna Beach. And John Wayne and his family all belong to this country, to this club. So they used to come out there. He and his sons used to come out there all the time and ride and, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, he was a really nice guy.
I've heard
that.
He
was a lot, just a lot, very much like you would think he would be.
That's, and, you know, honestly, if you would have told me different, I've got him on such a pedestal. I would have just thought you were lying if you'd have told me.
Well, he lived in, you know, he lived in Newport Beach.
Absolutely.
And his sons, his older sons, I think he had several wives, so he had younger kids, but he had several sons that were like teenagers, you know, when I was working there. And they used to come out and shoot pool and ride and have dinner. And, you know, Coto de Casa was kind of a really cool place in, you know, in the early days of its existence. I think it's now kind of like more, you know, more of a gated community. But in those days, he used to come out. And, I mean, he'd walk through the, you know, the clubhouse and he'd say hi to people. And he was just a very, very nice man.
Yeah, that's... That's great for me to hear because I've always thought of him that way, and I've always tried to make my assessments of famous people on what I thought they were like off the screen a little bit, and he was one that I'd always heard and decided that he was
well,
a genuine
see, you
person.
Would have loved to talk to my dad because my dad was a person who, if you asked him about anybody he worked with, who was practically everybody, you know, he would tell you always the good stuff. And
yeah.
I think that's the difference between the media now and the media then, is that, you know, in the old days, in the movies and in Hollywood, everybody would say good things about each other because they all wanted to work.
Sure.
And if you diss somebody, you know, then they don't give you a job. These days, it's a little bit different. You know, people just say what they want and let the chips fall where they may.
Well, I think it was that they wanted to work, no doubt. I think it was also people were a little different back then. People chose to kind of accentuate the positive.
That's right.
Even when it wasn't necessarily about getting a job or for their own selfish interests. And
you know, the show business is a very kind of a small community. And surprisingly enough, you know, particularly in the movie business and in the music business, you know, most people kind of know each other. I mean, if you're working, if you're a working musician or a working actor or a director or somebody, you know, it's a fairly small community. You know, people get to know each other. So my dad was very protective of that idea. You know, he grew up in that business and it was very good to him.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Obviously it was good to him. Anyone that does anything for on the caliber that he did and for as long as he did, obviously knew how to not only do their craft but play their cards a little bit as well.
Well, you know, he's jumping up and down now wherever he is, probably in movie heaven, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
He would love this conversation, but, you know, the thing of it is, if you were talking to him, you'd be on for hours.
Oh, that's, I think, though, I mean, and obviously I never knew him, but I imagine the life experiences that he had, I would be more than happy to just talk to him for hours. It's was a great time in history, a great time in entertainment when when there really wasn't a whole lot of concern other than just making a good product. And
that's right.
Anyhow, I don't want to dwell on your dad because maybe not to the same extent yet, but you have just as many interesting things going on in your life. Your website is kind of a potpourri of things that are going on. You're an artist, you're a TV show host, and an author.
Right.
You have a whole section of projects on your website that just, it's amazing. Screenplays, books, web songs, TV shows,
right.
Art. You enjoy creating, it looks like.
Well, you know, I do, and I'm one of those people that has sort of a short attention span.
Oh,
so I really like to keep working. You know, working particularly in the creative areas, I think, kind of feeds on itself. You know, you start to do one thing and then you are offered another thing and you do that and it opens up another door. And if you're willing and if you're brave enough, I think sometimes it takes a little bit of courage to jump into something that you're not sure about. But, you know, I mean, you probably did that when you started this show. I mean, it's sometimes it's a little daunting, but you think, well, why not?
Yeah, that's I'm the same way too, and my I call it kind of entrepreneurial, not in the sense of making money, but I just like to.
Exactly.
I like to, but don't get me wrong, I like to make money too, and I need money to exist. I'm not anti-money, but that's how I define entrepreneurism. Is I see a situation and I kind of, even if it's for selfish reasons, I want to make it better. I want to do something a little bit bigger and bolder than what I'm currently doing. And my wife calls it lack of focus, with a smile on her face. But
that's why she loves you.
Well, sometimes, and that's sometimes maybe why she wants to smack me in the back of the head too.
Well, you know, creative people are not always completely understood by the rest of the world, and that's okay. It took me a while to realize that everybody wasn't going to understand me, and you know what? That's okay. As long as they allow me to do my thing and they respect me, then that's cool. I respect them for what they do, and you know, I mean, I have accountants and people that do manage different parts of my life, and they do their job just very, very well. So God bless them. I'm glad they're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
That
you're mirroring my life. I even went through a phase where I didn't understand myself and was fighting it, and thought that I needed to be more detail oriented and focused on long term tasks.
But you can't.
And it held me back. And I mean, I've honestly been more successful in my ventures when I've kind of embraced this lack of focus that I have.
I remember reading a long time ago an interview with Steven Spielberg where somebody said to him, you know, how did you get to do this? And he said, you know what? He said, somebody told me once when I was very young that I should do what I love to do. And he said, the fact that I can earn money making movies is amazing to me. But he said, I would be doing it even if I didn't get paid, because this is what I love.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you do what you love, you know, the money and the success will follow, but that's not what you do it for.
No, absolutely.
You know, you do it because it keeps you alive.
Yep. It keeps your heart pumping. I couldn't agree more.
It keeps you going. It makes you want to get up in the morning. And I'm doing this media tour right now, you know, for my book, for my trilogy. And, you know, I have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to talk to people in New York that are doing the morning show.
Yeah.
And my friends say, are you kidding me? I said, well, you know what? It's cool. It's an interesting thing to do, to talk to somebody in Hutchinson, Kansas.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think that's, it's the same thing with my show. I have plans for it to make some money, to keep it, to make more money than it is. But, the main focus is just these conversations, that it's interesting to me, and it's a break in a sometimes monotonous day that makes it all worth it. So I couldn't agree with you more on that.
You know what they say, that if you're good, people will find you.
I agree.
And I'm an indie publisher. I'm a green publisher, and I'm also a writer and artist. And people, I think, have found my work because it is a little bit different. It's not like everything else, but you find the people that you connect with.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that that's probably what you're doing.
That is. It's exactly what I'm doing. It's a ongoing struggle, but it's incredibly fun, and I enjoy it. You talked about being an author a little bit. You talked about this media tour that you're on right now. A total of 4 books, is that right? This trilogy and then a book before that? Is that what you have under your belt?
I started with a book called Sensual Indigo, Memoir of a Renaissance Woman, which was a collection, it is a collection of my poetry and some parables, some stories, and it's all illustrated with my art. That is a very beautiful book. And fortunately for me, I had a lot of copies printed, so I still have archives of that in a limited edition. But mainly the Big Sur, Mystic Adventures in Big Sur trilogy, and I have three more books coming in that series, are novels. So you get to come to Big Sur, and you get to live the dream of Big Sur if you're reading these books.
It's what I'm always interested in authors or in discussions with authors on what prompted it. What was the thought in your head when you sat down and thought a trilogy of books about mystic adventures in Big Sur was something
well,
you wanted
to
do? Well,
that's not how it happened.
Well, that's exactly
you know,
what
to
I
me,
wanted.
I don't have a grand plan. My life seems to unfold the way the universe wants me to work, I think, you know, which sounds kind of mystical in itself, but sometimes you have to sort of let go and listen to the prompts that come your way. And, you know, I was writing screenplays and painting and, you know, doing some things like that. And in the process, I was writing a screenplay about a woman who lived in Big Sur by the name of Margaret Owings. She was an activist that literally saved Big Sur in many, many ways. She was one of the people that prevented them from building on the coast, which I think is a really important thing. And she was also a lover of animals and you know, particularly the sea otter, and, you know, was an activist for them. So she became interested in my book about, you know, sensual indigo and wanted me to come down and bring her a book. So I agreed to do that, and before I was able to get down there, she died. So I was kind of disappointed because, you know, she was a famous woman in this area, and she was quite a pioneer. So I actually went down after she died and, you know, looked at her house, which is a beautiful, famous house on the coast, and I read her oral history. Have you ever done that?
Have I ever done an oral history?
Well, have you ever read an oral history?
Yes.
Well, you know, it's an interesting way to learn about a person because, you know, it's not somebody else writing about you. It's you telling your own story. And she told her story about Big Sur, and she told her story about, you know, growing up in Berkeley and coming down to Big Sur and all of this and why she loved it. And, you know, I just kind of became very fascinated with the whole thing. And I went down there, I decided to do a screenplay about her, and she was, you know, she was connected to Robert Redford with various different things that she did for, you know, saving the coast.
Sure.
And so we got into some talks about doing a film about her. So I wrote a screenplay called Wild Bird, which was for his company, and I went down to Big Sur and I started doing all of this research. And, you know, Big Sur is one of these places where you kind of have to, you have to gain the trust of the people who are there.
Absolutely.
And then they start to tell you all these stories. So, you know, I spent some time and I got to know some of the people there, and, you know, I came away with the feeling that, you know, this is this little enclave, you know, of people down there in this fabulously beautiful place, and, you know, they're secretive and they're quiet about it and they're very private. And, you know, if you don't know somebody there, you don't ever learn these things. So that whole idea appealed to me, and when I decided to stop writing screenplays and start writing novels, which I much prefer, there was no other place to go.
Absolutely, it's and I've been to Big Sur twice.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about.
To some extent, yeah, I was a complete outsider, really just enjoying landscape and geography and what's the bridge? There's a bridge in Big Sur that the Bixby Bridge or something
like
that.
The Bixby Bridge, which is famous for the Big Sur Marathon.
Right, yeah. And those, I mean, so I was very much just a outside tourist that wanted to get off of a Marine Corps base and go see cool things. But I definitely understand that concept and how that place, just the landscape of that place, let alone the backstories, could be.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's incredible, and it's not what there's so much to California. Folks in the other 49 states have a perception of, and it's a true perception of parts of California, but there's so much landscape and.
Well, you know, they think that we are the land of fruits and nuts,
yeah.
And that's probably true in many ways. I mean, when I travel, a lot of times people say, "You're from California, aren't you?"
Yeah.
And I say, "How do you know?" And they go, "Are you kidding me?"
Right, right.
Look at you.
Right, and the whole Big Sur culture and the Berkeley culture combined with the jet set of Los Angeles are the perceptions that people
right.
have, but there's so much more to it, and especially when you get, I think the further north you move in California, sometimes the more interesting it gets, actually. But
well, I like, you know, I grew up in Laguna Beach and in Los Angeles and in Hollywood and L.A., and I moved up here, you know, to Monterey, actually on kind of a whim, which was really surprising. I came here on business, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And I was ready to get out of Southern California, which is way, way, way too crowded for me. And I came up here, and I just thought, you know what? This is where I want to be. And it has turned out to be the place where my soul is. You know, it's a place where you can breathe.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a place of soul. I mean, it's a place where people can go to
right.
to find their soul. So,
you know, Henry Miller wrote a lot of stuff here.
Yeah, absolutely. Lived in Big Sur for a while.
Yes, he did. And, you know, a lot of the concerts that we have here, we're actually starting to attract big name music people here. And they play at two major places. One of them is the Golden State Theater, which is in Monterey. And the other one is the Henry Miller Library, which is in Big Sur.
So, you know,
you get to go down to Big Sur and you go out, you sit outside and you see these fabulous bands playing outside in the trees. You know who Mumford and Sons is?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, well, they were here, maybe 6 months ago and did two shows. One was actually here at the fairgrounds and the other one was at the Henry Miller Library.
Wow.
And
I didn't know that.
From what I hear, I did not go to that show, but I hear that they were absolutely fabulous.
Oh, they are phenomenal in person.
Yeah.
A great great live
yeah.
band. Let's get back to the books themselves just a little bit.
Okay.
It's a trilogy, and you said there's more books coming?
Yep, I've already started the fourth book.
Well, give us the what are we getting into if we order the first three books? Give us the lowdown on the first trilogy.
The trilogy, as I told you, you know, I really didn't start out to write a trilogy. I started out to write a novel about a woman named Diana Falconer, who is happens to be a screenwriter and a painter. And she lives in Big Sur, on a cliff kind of by herself in a cottage and, you know, absolutely loves her life. And she gets lucky and sells her book to the movies. So she goes to LA to work on the film, and she ends up, you know, having a romance with the star of the film, of course. And he ends up coming back up to Big Sur with her because she loves it there. And, you know, it's a very, very wild ride. It's a sexy, wild, incredible story. And at the end, it is literally a cliffhanger, which I will tell you no more.
Excellent.
The second book is Jay Beach. And, you know, what happened with Jay Beach was that I just went crazy and wrote this really, this really long book. And we decided to divide it into two parts because it was 900 pages. And so before we started the edits, and you know, that's a big book.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we decided that the audience, you know, the average reader does not have an attention span that's that long. So we decided to break it into two parts.
So the first book
is called
first book is called Jasmine Dogs. And then,
Jasmine Dogs, Mystic Adventures in Big Sur, Volume 1.
And then the next two books are actually titled, they're both titled Jade Beach.
They're both titled Jade Beach, and that's Volume 2 and Volume 3. So what you do is you pick up after the end of, you know, the first book, you pick up in the second book, which is Jade Beach. And you find out what happened to Diana, which is really pretty amazing. And then in the second book, and I guess do you have one?
I have the first one.
You have Jasmine Dogs.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you haven't seen then either one of the Jade Beach books.
No.
The Jade Beach books, the second part, which has just come out, is the bomb. I mean, it is absolutely amazing. The first part is beautiful and ethereal and interesting, and it leaves you hanging right in the middle, and then the second part wraps up that part of the story, and it's amazing.
Let me ask you this. How important are, in your mind, I'm going to reword the question. How important are your life experiences in your ability to put down on paper an interesting fictional novel?
In other words, is this my story? Is that what you're asking me?
No, not really. Well, that could be, you could absolutely answer that question.
I wish that my life was.
but, and I'm not.
I wish my life was as fabulous as Diana's, but it's very important to me to, as a writer, to have the audience be on the edge of their seat. Because that's the kind of book I like. Okay, I like to read a book that keeps me up at night, you know what I mean?
Right.
I like to read a book that really gives the finest that I have every single time. I think that's how you challenge yourself as an artist.
Right.
And, you know, if you are really, truly a creative person, you always want to be better.
Right.
So if you're writing a book and you're writing a story and, you know, you just let it roll and you give it everything you've got and you give it all the beautiful descriptions that are in your head and you give it a great story, you know, and a drama. And, you know, it kind of has a life of its own.
But my question was more of that beautiful description that you've talked about. When you can get into details about Big Sur and you
right.
can get into details, about a Hollywood lifestyle to, mm-hmm. you know, to some extent, some of yours more as a child of an actor, but you have some life experiences that allow you to write not necessarily that the story is yours,
right.
but the back detail. You know, I'm a person that watches a historical movie, a Western or something, and I'm going to watch it once and be obsessed with what the lead actors are doing. And then I'm going to watch it again and see if the crew took the time to make sure that the person that's three levels back in the frame is doing something realistic.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, sure.
In fact,
a good friend of mine is a person that we call a continuation expert. And this is a person who works on the film to be sure that the Band-Aid's in the same place in
right.
every shot.
Right. Or that if it's the film filmed it's a story set in the 1890s that
it's.
And
you don't see an airplane going.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I think that those kind of minute details require either a lot of study and research or some life experience. And again, I'm not trying to make you admit that this is your story. I'm just trying to get to the point that because you're familiar with Big Sur, you're familiar with the Hollywood scene, you've written a screenplay, you have some insight into those details that I think is what really draws a reader in. You know, I think any of us could write a book about adventures in Big Sur, and we could just get on Wikipedia and find out where Big Sur was and what it was, and you know. But someone that's lived through those details can really get into a realism of the experience.
You know what they say, that you should write what you know.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
You know, we actually just had a celebration of John Steinbeck here a couple weeks ago, who, of course, is probably the most famous writer from this area besides Henry Miller. And John Steinbeck, of course, wrote all of these books about this area, and he obviously wrote what he knew, which was pretty depressing in many ways, but he was a fabulous writer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when you read The Grapes of Wrath, you know what it was like in the Depression.
Right.
So that's kind of, I think, your job when you're a writer, is to put the reader in that place.
Yeah, and you have to know that place to effectively put the reader in that place. That's
many of the places that you read about in my books, I have been.
Well, and that's...
So I have been to Paris, and I have been to Sicily, and I have been to Rome, and I have been to New York, and a lot of other places. And I have been to a lot of the restaurants that I describe in L.A. and a lot of the cool places. So, you know, I mean, I think that's a fun thing to share with everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely...
And I have been to Hutchinson, Kansas.
There you go. But you probably didn't put that in the book, did you?
No, I didn't put it in the book. I don't think anybody would really say, I don't think they'd be too interested in the adventures of a very little girl in Hutchinson, Kansas. They would.
You haven't written all of 4, 5, and 6 yet. You could still tie Hutchinson, Kansas.
Right. You're actually right about that. And one of the books, I do have a plan for the last three books, in that I know one of them is going to be the backstory.
There you go.
So the one called The Arrangement, which is going to be the fifth book, is the backstory of Diana.
Well,
and
maybe she spent a little time.
The backstory is going to be really fun to write.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's I love the backstory on things. I love stories that are presented by, here's the part.
Here's the part you don't know.
Right, but first they're presented like, here's the part that is instantly interesting, and now let us go back and show you how we got to this point.
Exactly.
I love that kind of a story. So
exactly,
and
you know, that's what I'm going to do. So I will be curious to know, you know, if you read the first two books, and then read the one that, you know, when you actually have Jasmine Dogs, have you read it?
Not all of it, but some
of
it.
If you read the three books, then you will kind of see how everything unfolds.
All right. Well, I will. I'll read all six of them when I can get my hands
on
them.
I want you to send me a review, because you are a very thoughtful person.
Well, I don't know about that, but I try.
Well, you know, you'd be surprised. There aren't a lot of men, and I hate to generalize about men, but I will. There aren't a lot of men who will go into that territory and read a book that is primarily about a female character. It takes a certain type of a man to be that enjoys that. But I have quite a few men have written reviews on my website, which you may have already seen.
I have.
And, you know, they really notice some very cool things.
Well, you know, it's maybe not about getting a man to read it. It's just about getting them to admit it publicly and write a review that they read it.
You know, what's interesting about their reviews is that they tell me that they now know how women think.
Well, that would take more than six books, I think.
You think? Probably a lifetime.
Yeah, maybe 50 books. No. I can appreciate that and see where that could come out of the book.
I would love to have you send me a review of just the books that you read so far. You know, and keep in touch so that I know what you're reading and everything, because you are a market that I really am not too familiar with right now. You know, I don't know much about the Midwest anymore.
Well, we can do that. I will read it, and I will send you a review, and we'll go from there with it.
Maybe we can do another interview.
Absolutely. That's what I do, is do interviews, and I always need interesting ones.
Okay.
Well, super. If for folks that want to find out more information, they can go to jwwinslow.com.
Right.
And it's a fascinating website, because you have the content on the website is incredible, because you have so much going on.
Also, I will tell you that we just posted a series of interviews on YouTube, which are you know, some things that I just did recently about the new book. And people are really finding that, and they're very, you know, they're interested to know kind of the thought process behind it. And one more thing that I will tell you is that, you know, Tom Ayers, who is kind of a local rock god around here, wrote all this fabulous music for my books. And he's going to be out here this summer with me, and we are going to do performances. So you want to come out and see that.
Yeah, that sounds very cool and interesting and a neat...
come back to California.
A neat way for... what's the time frame? I'm going to be in California the last week of June.
Well, actually, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it that soon. It's probably going to be Indian summer.
Okay.
But, you know, if you are in Monterey, you should definitely look me up.
Okay.
I would love to meet you, and, you know, you can reach me through my website. What are you going to be doing in California?
Just a reunion of Marine Corps folks.
A reunion?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, we do it every year, different places around the country.
So where are you going to be?
For the most part, the Oceanside, San Diego area.
Mm.
Just because it's convenient for the guys.
My brother actually lived in Pacific Beach there and loved it.
Yeah, it's you know, there's parts of it that are great. It's way too many people for me down there.
Yeah.
And not bad people, just it's there's quality people, there's just too much quantity of them. I can't
Well, you know what? If you get tired of that, make your way up to Monterey and take a day or two and take a breath.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that area of California.
You should really do that. You should take your wife someplace in Big Sur and spend the night.
Yeah. Well, it's
she
a possibility.
Would absolutely love it. It's the most romantic place in the world.
Yeah, she's been to Big Sur. I moved her out there when I was in the Marine Corps, and we went up there together. And it's
there
a very, very, very cool place.
It's you know, you can get, and actually, you know, different times of the year. Of course, June is not a great time to get a deal on a room there.
Right.
But if I were you, I would start looking right now and see if they have any specials, and you know, but stay in a little small place.
Well, we'll check into that and see if we can make that happen.
Great. That's great. Thank you so much for calling, for, you know, having the interview and everything. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's author, artist, a little bit of everything, J.W. Winslow, jwwinslow.com. Check out her stuff. Cool book trilogy. What do you, if three books is a trilogy, what's six books? Is there a name for that?
I don't know.
We should look that up.
We're going to find out, though.
We should have that in mind, but there's going to be a trilogy times two eventually,
right?
As well as a lot of other interesting stuff on jwwinslow.com. Thank you so much for coming on today. It's been a great conversation.
Okay, Cody. Hope to see you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks.